Want more stories in your life without adding to your TBR? That's where Audible comes in. I use it for the original novellas, the Plus catalog like Deanna Reborn's Veronica Speedwell series, and those audiobook sales that you can beat. Right now, Audible has a special offer for new and returning members. Click the link in the show notes to see what deal you'll get and start listening today. Welcome to the What You Next podcast. In this podcast, your host, Lori Amin, will interview published authors to chat about their work, journey to getting published, and their book recommendations. If you share a passion for books and always looking for your next read, then join us. Welcome to the What You Next podcast. Today's guest is debut author Bethany Bennett. In this interview, we chat about her debut novel, Any Road Will Do, her search for inspiration, which was just one scene, and of course, some random book recommendations. Before we get to today's interview, I want to share a bit about today's sponsor. Today's episode is sponsored by Christmas Kisses with My Cowboy. This anthology features stories from three best-selling authors, Diana Palmer, Marina Deer, and Kate Pierce, who are beloved for writing sexy Western romance with alpha heroes and strong adventurous heroines. Here's a brief synopsis of each of the story. The first story is Blame It on the Mistletoe by Marina Deer. To claim his slice of the family ranch, Texas Ranger Noah is forced back to Chalk Crossing. All he expects to find is a tractor load of food painful of memories, until Christmas storm and power outage, and perhaps the magic of Christmas, delivers him a rescued intriguing woman named Faith. But who's rescuing him? The second story is Mistletoe Detour by Kate Pierce. When Morgan Valley Ranger Ted Baker gets out of his tow truck to pick a snowbound driver, he doesn't expect to find his old friend Veronica on the land with a pet pig, much less true love, just in time for Christmas. The third story is Mistletoe Cowboy by Dana Palmer. Horse Whisperer Parker doesn't drink, smoke, or gamble, and he doesn't have much to do with women either, until he meets a winsome widow, Kathy, and her sweet child. Could Christmas Kisses Under the Mistletoe bring Handsome Wrangler the gift of his vernal family? These are three stories featuring Christmas Kisses with My Cowboy. You can purchase at your local bookseller. For links to buy on Amazon and Bookshop, please visit check out the show notes. For more book recommendations, please visit KensingtonBooks.com. Now let's go to the interview. Hi, Bethany. Welcome to the Retro Next podcast.
Hi, Laura. Thanks for having me.
So happy to have you here. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Let's see. I am a newbie author. I'm debuting this year. And let's see. I was a military brat and then a military wife. So we're now retired military and living way up in the way north corner of the Northwest. Okay. So I do get moose in my yard. I was actually cursing deer this afternoon.
Oh my gosh.
Because I have this big, gorgeous, lush grapevine in my backyard that goes over this arch, and I have been babying this thing for years trying to get it to do what it's supposed to do. Mm-hmm. And I finally had enough of a grape harvest that I would be able to make wine.
Ooh!
Which is like that's the dream, right? If you're going to grow grapes, you have to make wine. And I went out there, and the deer are in there fattening themselves up for the winter stage where they eat anything, and they have never messed with my grapevine before. Never. They stripped that sucker from the ground all the way up to shoulder height.
No.
It's just horrible twigs. It's awful.
Oh, no. Oh, I'm sorry. Oh,
life in the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. And did I read in your bio that you grew up in Alaska or you have been in Alaska?
I did. You know, as a child, younger childhood, up until junior high time frame, we moved all over the place because my dad was military.
Yeah.
But once we all, there's three of us girls, and we were all, 3 years apart, so little stair steps. And once we got to the age where we were wanting to get involved in school activities and junior high and high school and clubs and all this, my dad did his best to kind of jump from command to command to command right there. And so we were able to stay on Kodiak Island for my later schooling years. And that's what I consider my hometown is Kodiak Island.
Oh my gosh.
Which is the big one with the bears.
Yeah. So how's life in Alaska? Is it like it's said in the books, or is there something unique about it? You're like, okay, yeah, the books didn't get it right.
Well, honestly, I think one of the things that a lot of people don't fully grasp is if you actually take the land mass of Alaska and lay it over the US, mm-hmm. you have so many varying different zones for weather. I mean, just like you're going to have different weather in Arizona than you're going to have in Michigan, you know, so your land mass is so huge that even though a ton of it is up, you know, in the Arctic Circle, so it's not like you're going to get Arizona weather or anything. But where I was on the island, we were right there in the Aleutian Chain. And so weather-wise, it's comparable to Ireland. So a lot of fog, a lot of mist, a lot of rain, more ice than snow in the winter, although we do get snow. However, you get the, I mean, I spent, what, 13 years in Kodiak? And I talk about the people that are way up in the interior, like in Nome. Those are hardcore.
Gotcha. Yeah, I'm always fascinated about crazy.
Those people are hardcore.
Yeah, I'm fascinated about Alaska. Like, it's like a whole different world, you know, wilderness and like survival and the cold and all these different things. So
it is. And you know, and one of the things with the island was that we would, because it's a small community, and there's no way out. I mean, you have a 13-hour ferry ride or you have an expensive airplane ride. You know, there's no bridge to the mainland. There's no, so everything comes in on big Sealand shipping containers. And, you know, you go into the grocery stores and the way that you find the freshest bread is the one that's still frozen. You know, like it's a very different life. And, but I think that it taught me to rely on neighbors. I think that it taught me the value of community, which, especially being a military brat, that is a lesson that sometimes doesn't sink in. You know, military kids have a tendency, they call it a third culture kids, where they're kind of their own. And and we just sort of do things a little bit differently and we don't get as attached. And so the concept of hometown pride or a childhood home is very foreign. But there are so many things to love about Alaska. And I used to tell people that, because, you know, you hear that a lot. People say, oh, I've always wanted to go. And I usually tell them that if you go, it doesn't matter when you go during the year, you're going to know if you're going to love it or hate it within the first 2 weeks. You know, like, it's really just, it's a land of extremes. It's extreme darkness, extreme sunshine. It's extreme cold and wind and weather. And the people are different. And I love it. I absolutely love it. But at the same time, because the island is so separated from the world in so many ways, I think that it's, there aren't as many job opportunities unless you're in very specific industries. So when we decided to retire from the Air Force, you know, we got that last set of orders that says proceed to home of choice. And my husband and I looked at each other and said, well, good grief, what does that look like? So we landed in the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah, which is like, it's somewhat similar. You know, you're not far, you're closer to Alaska, but you're not that close to. So.
Exactly. It feels like home.
Yeah.
Which I think is important. And you know, we had been down in southern Idaho, at a military base there for quite a while, actually. Mm-hmm. And I owned an indie bookstore there. I kind of inadvertently put down roots. And so coming up here was a big change and it was a big shift, but I'm glad we did it.
Oh, this is so exciting. So let's talk about writing. What inspired you to become a writer?
Oh, I think most writers always say, well, I always wanted to be, you know, and then that's the truth. I always wanted to be, but honestly, I think that fear held me back for many, many years. Mm-hmm. But even with the fear, there was always this thought of, well, I'll just do it in secret. Like it's your dirty little secret that you're just sitting here and writing these stories. Because for me, there was always no doubt that if I was going to write, I was going to write romance. Mm-hmm. And I was raised in a very conservative home. And if you've read my books or my book so far, I'm sure that you realize that this will horrify my mother.
I was like, would you share this book with your mother?
I might give her a redacted copy.
Okay, the abridged version.
The abridged version, yes. And then stuff happens, and it's nice. That's all they get.
A love scene.
Fade to black.
Yeah.
But, so I was always terrified of this, like, oh dear God, my mother's going to read this, you know. But I finally reached my late 30s, and I had already finished several at that point. Of course, that level of finishing versus the level of finishing that I have to operate in now are two completely different beasts. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I had several drafts of books. I finished my first one when I was like 15. I actually have a digital copy of it, and God willing, it'll never see the light of day. But, because I'm sure it'll just be painful if I try to go back and read it. Yeah. But, I finally reached my late 30s, and I just said, you know what? It's time to stop hiding, and it's time to stop doing things in secret, and it's time to realize that this is my oldest dream. Mm-hmm. This is my longest held dream. And like I said, I had owned an indie bookstore. I had seen the industry from that side of the desk, and I wanted to be the one creating the content. And so I really started kind of outing myself as a writer, being like, this is what I want to do. And it kind of feels like being a little girl and being like, I want to be a ballerina when I grow up, you know, mm-hmm. like it seems like it's too big of a dream, mm-hmm. but endless hours of hard work and some straight up dumb luck. And you too can have your oldest dream come true.
So what was the journey to get the book published? Like, did you query? Did you do pitch? How did you get the book published?
Well, I'm aware that, I mean, it's like I said, it's endless hours of hard work. It's unreal. Yeah, if you actually figure out how much it like the pay comes down to, I mean, it's like quarters of a penny per hour. But you do it because you love it. And but even with all that hard work, I have to admit that my journey to publication was not normal. I managed to be in the right place at the right time and got lucky. So many, and my heart hurts when I see these brilliant writers. I mean, I'm in a great critique group, and one of them, she has stories to tell and her work is good. And she's going through the querying process and she's like, well, okay, got another rejection and here we go, you know? There doesn't seem to be any rhyme or reason to who slips through the cracks and actually makes the right connections and who doesn't. You know, not when you're looking at the work and comparing apples to apples anyway, you know? And so for me, I entered two RWA writing contests that were chapter contests.
Okay.
Because my goal was to get it in front of people that didn't know me, mm-hmm. to get feedback from the judges. And if I was lucky enough to final, then the finalist judges were like agents and editors. And,
ooh, okay.
Woo, you know, sparkle, sparkle. Yeah. Like, wow, this is amazing. You know, for $20 or $25 to enter a contest, that was a good investment. And to my shock, I finaled in one where actually is where I got my agent.
Okay.
And and the other one I tied for first place.
Ooh,
and perfect. So I was just shocked. I was like, holy crap, you mean it's not complete and utter like turtle pucky that I'm throwing out of the screen here. This is amazing. but truly what had to happen was I had to resolve to push past the fear. Mm-hmm. And then I had to work my butt off. And a big part of that was, like I said, being at the right place, the right time, meeting the right people. Mm-hmm. I was at a reader event and I met these lovely, brilliant, brilliant writers. But one of them was Nicole Locke. She mm-hmm. writes medievals for Harlequin Historical.
Mm-hmm.
And I was talking to a friend and we ended up just standing in front of Nicole and my friend starts talking and I had been telling my friend about, you know, this idea that I had this spark of an idea. Right. And she's like, oh, you have to tell her about this. You have to tell her about this. And so I just kind of bumble and fumble my way through telling her about this idea that I had. And Nicole looked at me and she got very serious for a second. And she said, are you serious about this? And I had to admit it out loud for the first time.
Yeah.
And I said, yeah, I am. I'm serious about this. And she said, okay, then connect with me on Facebook. And we checked in every night at 8:30, 5 days a week, 6 days a week, for the entire drafting process.
Wow.
And we held each other accountable for word count. And then she was like, all right, you have a draft. Now let's teach you about these things. And this woman was just, she was priceless. And she was a mentor in every single possible way you can conceive of it. Because when I finished the draft, you know, I was still such a new writer that my concept of editing was like, we're going to go and check for grammar and commas. And she was like, oh, sweet summer child.
No, gotta think about other things.
So, yeah, I worked with Nicole and did the draft and then started editing this thing and started learning craft. And and one of the great things about craft is that you are always going to be learning. You're never going to learn at all.
Yep.
And so I started working my way through craft books and learning these concepts that I'd never even heard of before. And, you know, the concept of like deeper POV and, you know, this showing versus telling and what that actually really means and the balance of show and tell and all of this. And so I was just like glutting myself on craft books and knowledge while I'm trying to edit this monstrosity of a draft that I'd come up with. And finally felt like it was safe to send out into the world, sort of. And so I entered those two RWA contests. And like I said, the first one of the finalist judges was Rebecca Strauss from DeFiore & Company, who ended up being my agent. And I completely, absolutely adore her.
Oh, that's so fantastic. I love the whole process, the whole journey, that it was just not this linear process where it's like, oh, I'm just going to write a book and I'm just going to query and just going to get it. Like you had mentors along the way. You were presented opportunities. You came out of the closet and start writing and start sharing it. That's amazing.
And you know, I think at a certain point, it really, really feels like work.
Yeah.
At that point, there's no guarantee you're ever going to get paid for that work. There's no guarantee there's ever going to be, you know, an actual finish line, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that I had to decide and just dig in my heels and be stubborn as I'll get out. Mm-hmm. And because actually when I was drafting that book, you're talking about process. Like when I was drafting that book, I went to that reader event and the next week I went in for a massive reconstruction shoulder surgery.
Oh my gosh.
And so I was super high on Percocet and in a tremendous amount of pain and only had one arm. And I was having to do physical therapy appointments 3 times a week. And I live in the middle of nowhere. So it's, you know, 40 minutes to anything. And so I was driving for 40 minutes each direction. And then I was stuck in this mobility chair in the PT office where this machine is moving your arm for you. Mm-hmm. And I'm claustrophobic. So that was like my own personal idea of hell.
Oh my gosh.
And it's because I'm like, I'm strapped to this thing and I can't move.
Yeah.
And so I started dictating into a Word document with my phone.
Ooh.
And I started just dictating the story. And of course, what Google Docs thinks I say and what I'm actually saying are two entirely different things.
Yeah.
So I would spend the entire time as I'm sitting in this chair in PT 3 times a week for 45 minutes at a time, mm-hmm. one-handed on my phone on this tiny little screen, editing the Google Doc as I went.
Oh my gosh.
And that's how I drafted the first book.
Oh my gosh. This is so fascinating. I'm like fascinated with like how people write. Like the different process and like the different buckets of time, they made the time to get this work done. So this is fascinating.
I'm glad I'm not boring you.
No, you're not. So speaking of writing, Jihan Online or GC were destroy leads? Are you a plotter or are you cancer?
With this book, the book that became Any Rogue Will Do, I was very much like, I am free. I am unfettered. I will not obey rules. And so I pantsed the hell out of that book and I had to rewrite it like 3 times.
Small issue, but we don't think about that.
And so I learned that there is a balance between mm-hmm. pantsing and plotting, and I do benefit from some structure. Mm-hmm. So now I kind of think of myself as like a planter. You know, I'm somewhere in the middle where now I know where I'm going, but I don't necessarily know how I'm going to get there.
Okay.
So I try to have certain points of like, this is going to be, you know, this is this turning point here. They have to get here and they have to get here. And somewhere around here is when they're going to start getting physical. And then I just kind of let them talk and let them play mm-hmm. and figure it out as I go. So yeah, I have an idea of where I'm going, but I'm kind of like, you know, the dad in the car that you have a destination, but he refuses to use the map or ask for directions.
I love this. So how do you develop your characters? Like, do they come to you? Do you brainstorm ideas? Do you do some like exercise trying to figure out the backstory? Like, what's the process like to develop characters?
Well, it makes me sound like I might need medication of some kind, but they start talking.
You just get these
like snippets of conversation, and it's almost like you're overhearing someone else's conversation.
Yeah.
And you figure out who they are. And really the characters come to me very pretty well formed in a lot of ways. I don't brainstorm on characters. I do brainstorm on plot. This is where my critique group has ended up being they're priceless. They're lovely women and I love them to death. So they are fantastic because I'm like, okay, so again, I know where I want to go, but I'm not sure how I'm getting there. I find myself, I find myself with those, when we are bouncing ideas on plot, they'll suggest something and I'm like, no, so-and-so wouldn't do that. It's just very certain in my head that nope, they wouldn't do that.
Yeah.
And sometimes they surprise you when, mm-hmm. you know, when you're kind of trucking along with your little keyboard and you're doing your thing. And then this person just gets really, really loud. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, that was how, in Rogue, the best friend, Calvin, mm-hmm. was so loud. I had to go back and like tone him down a few notches and just tell him like, dude, shut up. You'll get your own book. Clearly you are hero material. You'll get your own book. Just like take it down a notch or two. Okay. Stop trying to steal every scene because every scene he's in, he's just so loud. And so, and there's a character at the very, very end of the book when they are dealing with the villain. And the gentleman who takes the villain off their hands ended up being, like, he's only on the page for, half of a page of the entire book. But he started talking, and I was like, oh, crap, you're the hero of book 3, aren't you? You know? And they just, like, introduced themselves, so to speak.
You're like, okay, I got another book. Thank you. I love this. So speaking of Any Rogue Will Do, what was the source of inspiration? Like, what was the little seed that planted the story?
Okay, well, I was reading an article online about the role that women's fashion plays in espionage during times of war. Mm-hmm. And this is probably a good time to mention that I have ADD. So this isn't a spy story or anything like that. This is just how my brain works. And so, what it all kind of came down to in, you know, all of the fun stories and everything else that this article is bringing out was that when our skirts permitted, they would fit a whole person under them and they would shuttle people, spies, agents, people that needed to escape under women's gowns, you know, mm-hmm. out of events into events, wherever. Right. And so these women, all they had to do was they were the wheels, so to speak, and whoever was underneath their gown. And being a bit of a dirty bird, I went, well, while you're down there.
Yeah, over that.
And so I had a scene in my head, and I didn't know who these people were. I just knew that he was under her gown, and she was not complaining about it. And, yeah. But I also knew that, the costumes that would require the gown that would require was not in the right era. And so I thought, okay, it's a masquerade ball. Mm-hmm. And then I'm like, okay, so they're at a masquerade ball. Well, I have to be actually like at the event just because that's way more fun. Mm-hmm. And then I knew that she's like having to hang on to something because he knows what he's doing. Mm-hmm. And so she's like white knuckling the balustrade, right?
Yeah.
And so I had this scene and I didn't know who they were or why they were doing it besides the obvious. Yeah. And that was the scene actually that I was telling my friend about. And then she marched me up to Nicole Locke and said, tell her about the scene, you know?
Yeah.
And that was this idea. And I didn't know who they were. But I was interested to find out. And mm-hmm. apparently it was a cool scene. So, because people were talking about it, that they were reacting well when I was talking to them. And mm-hmm. And I had to kind of backtrack from there mm-hmm. and figure out, you know, what kind of woman would and what kind of man would, and where are they at in their relationship, and what does their happy ending look like?
Mm.
And so that was a big part of it, was that particular scene and having the perfect timing of that scene with being at the historical romance retreat in Spokane, Washington. And I got to meet these amazing authors. I got to meet Eloisa James and Julia Quinn. And Ooh. Eloisa James, I'm not even kidding, she's like my writing icon, writing idol, that yeah. woman, her books carried me through some really dark years.
Yeah.
And so being able to meet them, being able to talk to them, and it wasn't just like a one day event. This is almost a week. Mm-hmm. It's like 4 or 5 days, I think. And so, being surrounded by, you know, 200 enthusiastic, passionate historical romance readers, mm-hmm. and then all of these amazing authors.
Yeah.
And I think it made me feel like maybe I could be okay mm-hmm. writing what I have always wanted to write. And maybe I could be safe putting mm-hmm. these stories out into the world. And so, like I said, it was being in the right place at the right time. And those two things were very much the inspiration for Any Rogue Will Do.
I love this. And so what was the research process like to write a historical romance?
For me, this one, because it was my first that I was actually planning for publication, mm-hmm. I deliberately kept the research elements light because mm-hmm. I knew that I was doing an uphill battle learning craft to begin with.
Yeah.
And so, for me, there's a lot of etymology, mm-hmm. you know, a lot of, you know, checking out and seeing how can I use this word? Can I use this phrase? Can I use this, you know, the etymology of this word? This last week I had to check the history of the word fart. And
I just love
that is the glamorous life of a romance writer.
Yeah.
So there were a lot of word searches like that. I was trying to deliberately keep the research elements light. I'm drafting the third book now, and he's a sailor, and it's a whole, the Royal Navy is an entire like wormhole of information that you can just disappear into. Mm-hmm. And so I'm finally kind of feeling a little more confident to be able to do more research online, looking through British archives, looking through things like that. But for this book in particular, I was deliberately making sure that the information I was gleaning was from reading a ton in the genre,
mm-hmm.
Having a lifetime of a love of the genre.
Yeah.
And so I think that in this instance, I get to just be like, I didn't really research that much.
Okay.
it was more word searches. And it was more things along those lines, just to make sure that what I was writing was feeling a little bit more semi-authentic. I mean, obviously we are translating a historical time period for a modern reader and a modern sensibility. But you do want to make sure that you don't have anything crazy that's just jumping off the page and pulling them out of the story as a reader. So
that was fun.
Yeah.
So what can we expect for book two and book three? As you mentioned, you're working on book three.
I actually just got my edits back, my editorial letter for book two today.
Ooh! Oh my god, congratulations.
Thank you. So I'm happy to say that my editor liked it.
Oh, that's amazing. That was so really good.
I was so relieved. I actually legit cried. Because, you know, the editorial process on Rogue was brutal. Oh my gosh, it was brutal. And even my editor and my agent were like, this is a really, really brutal process. I'm sorry. It's not always this hardcore, but at the same time, that process completely proved to me that my editor is worth her weight in gold. She's amazing. And she's able to take the best and make the best thing out of my words. So, so I was a little bit nervous sending her this, like, I haven't spent the last year editing this book, but it's here by deadline in the middle of 2020 hellscape.
Yeah. So, oh my gosh. Gosh. Yes.
Yeah. I'm so sorry. Cal's book is next. Cal's book comes out next summer.
Oh, perfect.
For Cal's book, you have Friends to Lovers, and the heroine is a little bit of a secret, but she's a ton of fun, and she swears like a sailor, and you get to meet Emma, who Cal talks about, which is his little sister, so it actually, book two picks up the next year after Ethan and Lottie are happily married. And Cal is launching his sister into society, and she is driving him to drink.
Oh, yes. That sounds so good.
So Emma is his sister, and she's a total spoiled brat.
Yeah.
But she has her own, you know, story that she's going to be telling. And so I hope that I do a good job of redeeming her, because she's the heroine of book three. Oh. So.
Exciting. I love how we sort of though by like characters that we fall in love, where you're like, you realize you read one book and you're like, I want to hear their story, and it's like, that's the next book in the series. So
so I hope that everyone likes the Misfits. You know, I mean the concept of the trilogy, the Misfits of Mayfair, was I really wanted to have these people that don't necessarily fit into society. And so each of them has their own, you know, isms, I guess, and their own reason why, and I think in some ways each of them ends up kind of thumbing their nose at society a little bit. You know, there's that, the scandalous, like, if everyone only knew exactly what was going on behind closed doors, they would all be shocked and horrified.
Yes, but it is so good.
Someone would have to fetch the smelling salts.
Yes. I love this. So now let's go to a round of book recommendations. This is an opportunity for you to share with the audience what you should read next. What is your favorite genre?
When it comes to favorite genres, honestly, I do research, I do nonfiction stuff, but truly, truly, my heart is in romance. I don't stray too much into mystery or thriller. I love historicals, I love contemporaries, and I love paranormal. And I think that paranormal probably takes a back seat, and because I love a really good paranormal, but I veer more towards a historical or a contemporary. Mm-hmm. And my love for those two subgenres are probably very much equal. But when I'm drafting, I tend to avoid historical.
Yeah.
Because imposter syndrome is real, yo.
I think it makes sense. I think it's the other part is, like, you may find yourself, like, you know, connected to an author, and you're like, is that my voice? Is that the author's voice? You know, so.
Yes. Well, and then, you know, sometimes you read something that is so beautifully done, and you just go, oh, Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Someday maybe I'll have a tenth of that talent, you know, and you just suddenly you're doubting everything and your story sucks. And so, you know, it's kind of self-care.
Yeah.
So you know what your buttons are. Yeah. But I do have an arc right now that I'm reading. And the only reason I'm reading it is historical, and I am drafting, so I'm breaking my own rule. But it's an arc, and so there's a timeline on it.
Yeah.
But I'm reading Lenora Bell's newest one, Love is a Rogue.
Yep.
And I'm really enjoying it so far. I'm not too far into it, but I'm really, really enjoying what's been on the page so far. Especially there's one line in the beginning where she talks about how, you know, like one more year and she'll be on the shelf. But she doesn't really understand why being on the shelf is such a bad thing to begin with. After all, yeah. Her best friends are books and her best friends are on shelves. She would just be with her best friends. Yeah. And I kind of went, oh, I get you.
That's so good. Oh my gosh. Yeah.
But I loved Princess and the Rogue by Kate Bateman.
It's fantastic.
I laughed my head off at Take a Hint, Danny Brown by Talia Hibbert.
Mm-hmm.
Catherine Stein's, she did one that's kind of like a sort of gothic-y Victorian-ish, and she does steampunk, but it's called The Scoundrel's New Con. That is actually at the top of my TBR pile once I'm done with Lenora Bell's.
Okay.
And I read one that was another arc that it was called Jane and Love by Rachel Gibney.
Yeah.
Now, okay, NetGalley lied. It is not a romance.
Oh.
Okay. That book wrecked me. And my poor family, like I'm sitting on the sofa sobbing my eyes out, right? It is so good. It is so good. It is not a romance.
Is it a love story or is it women's fiction?
It is a love story.
That's so disappointing.
It is a love story. And it's not like someone like really like, it's not like Nicholas Sparks where like, oh, they love each other. Someone's going to die soon. You know, it's like, it's more, it is a time travel.
Ooh.
Okay. For me, it's total catnip.
Yeah.
But, so I'm always on the lookout and I always have to try. And I kind of have this horrible, like, really toxic relationship with time travel books because I love them and I want them to be so good, but only a few of them live up to my expectations.
Yeah.
Well, the problem is that the person who's actually time traveling is Jane Austen.
Oh, okay.
And so it's like, it ends right.
Mm-hmm.
But that book wrecked me. And I was sitting on my sofa sobbing like a just, oh my gosh, like my eyes were puffy. It was horrible. And my poor husband walks into the room and he's like, are we okay? Do you need assistance? And my son is sitting next to me patting my knee going, no, daddy, it's fine. Mommy just read a sad book.
That's amazing.
And I had to tell my husband about it and I started crying all over again.
Oh my God.
But it is beautiful. It is beautifully done. So if you are more of a women's fiction or a lit fiction, a literature kind of reader, or you know, you like to extend your reading into those areas, I would highly recommend it. It's absolutely gorgeous and it's beautifully done. It's just not a romance.
That's awesome. So tell us where you can find you online.
I am at Bethany Bennett, two N's and two T's, BethanyBennettAuthor.com. And I'm building my newsletter subscriber list because, like I said, brand new baby author. So I'm new to the scene and still kind of building my my newsletter base. But eventually I'm going to be getting a novella to newsletter subscribers that's exclusive only to them.
Yay!
So I'm about 3/4 of the way through that, but right now I'm, you know, promo book one, getting ready to edit book two, and drafting book three at the same time. So the novella is taking a little bit of a break.
Yeah.
On Instagram, I'm Bethany Writes Kissing Books.
Hello.
And on Twitter, I'm Bethany Romance.
Awesome.
And then you can find my page on Facebook, Bethany Bennett Historical Romance.
Awesome.
And I'm going to eventually be building a on the Bethany Bennett Historical Romance page, you can find a little link to, we're calling it the Beehive. It's the hive. So it's just like a little reader page where people can go and actually talk specifically about, you know, things relevant, you know, to my stories. And, you know, I kind of try to keep a close eye on that one. So.
Oh, this is awesome. Thank you, Bethany, for being on the show.
Well, thank you so much for having me. This was really fun.
If you enjoyed this podcast, feel free to share with friends, subscribe, or rate and review the show. This is the easiest way to support this podcast. Want to join a romance-loving community? Want weekly book recommendations, monthly author Q&As, and book recommendation meetups? Make new friends? Then join our Patreon community. To sign up, please follow the links in the show notes. What to Read Next podcast is part of the Frolic Podcast Network. Find more podcasts to love on frolic.media/podcast. Thank you so much for listening and have a great day.
Are you an author, publisher, or book-related business looking to reach passionate readers? What to Read Next podcast is a perfect place to connect with an engaged audience of romance and mystery lovers who are always on the hunt for their next great read. Now, we're offering sponsorship opportunities. Whether you're launching a new book, promoting an upcoming release, showcasing a bookish product or services, we can help you get the word out. Let's work together to bring your books or businesses to readers who are ready to discover something new. Please visit whatyoureadnextblog.com/sponsorships to learn more or reach out to chat about the perfect sponsorship or package for you. Thank you so much for listening. Your next great reader is waiting for you.